Talk Show.
Recorded live.
This show contains mature content. Listener discretion is advised. One New York City Puerto Rican decided to start a radio show determined to piss the world off. By shoving a mirror within society's face, he kicks them in the balls. I present to you Louis B. This is the Crotch Shot Radio Show.
The Crotch Shot Radio Show. Yo, welcome to the Crotch Shot Radio Show, where we kick the issues in the balls. We are on an active war against bullshit. Yes, yes, yours truly has declared war on all bullshit. Anything that is corrupt and is full of crap must be destroyed with extreme prejudice. Yes, we find out who's fucking up, and we grab them by the throats, we throw them down, we stab it in the heart, we dump it in lye, and we don't give it the honor of a proper burial. If it's anything that's fucking with any one of your freedoms, then it needs to be destroyed. This is I'm tripping over my own tongue because I'm trying to fucking free verse it like a fucking rapper. Anyways, I'm your host, Louis B. I don't censor myself or hold my tongue. I attack the issues that I don't agree with, and I drag them into the light. And today won't be no different. We have Jason J. Broman of Canada. He does THYME for hemp. He's a hemp and marijuana activist, so we're going to be talking to him. He has a popular group on Facebook, so I'm going to give him a call, and before we get started, we're going to have the prayer for good radio.
In the name of Jesus, repeat it after me, bitch. I come in the name of Jesus, by the power of the Holy Spirit, God Almighty, you know, ruler of heaven and earth and every goddamn thing in between. You understand me now? You trust in the devil, huh? Well, if God send the devil in the name of Jesus by the power of the Holy Spirit, then motherfucker, you fucked up, huh? You fucked up, huh? You know your ass is due. What you got to speak? If you don't know,
hello?
You need to speak on this topic I'm bringing up. Shut your goddamn ass up.
That's right. If you're not down with the issues, shut your goddamn ass up. Anyway, Jason, how you doing?
I'm well, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine. So far, so good. I actually found you on Facebook because, I mean, I'm friends with a lot of, hemp and marijuana enthusiast, if we can put it that way.
Right.
Right. So, was checking out your site, and one question that I keep forgetting to ask: how is the legalization of hemp and marijuana going to stop crime?
How is it going to stop crime?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if the legalization of hemp is going to stop crime, but it's been something that has been controlled ever since, there's records of it over in Asia. The Sea of Japan and in the South China Seas, you know, it used to be a capital offense if you got caught exporting the leader's hemp seeds, his cannabis seeds.
Mm.
So you've had crime and punishment associated with cannabis and hemp ever since there's been recorded human history.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I would kill somebody if somebody tried to steal my seeds. Especially now, you know how hard they are to come by? So,
Thomas Jefferson got some out. He was able to get some out, believe it or not, of that good cannabis, and he got it out, and they brought it over, and you know, the rest is history, as they say. They wrote it down on hemp paper.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, there's like, what, a billion uses of hemp, of the male version, hemp alone?
It's unbelievable. I don't know what we're working on something now with the bio refinery project, and they end up, they take the hemp. And after they distill it and make ethanol with it, the ethanol, the byproduct, instead of petrochemical byproducts, what you're getting are organic chemical byproducts. And these things are pretty unbelievable. They're in high demand. You can make soap and cleaners and all kinds of stuff. You can even make something that's almost like a plastic, which is stronger and biodegradable. It's crazy not to use it. It's insane.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, one point that I make on my show, the reason why this is not legal is because it would allow regular slaves, or I mean, that's how they like to view us, as slaves, to be free, to be more independent. And they don't want that. They want us all dependent on them.
You see where it got us, though. Like, what's going on right now, and I don't want to bring up the backup plan of BP, but this example of what this has done to people by being dependent on dirty corporations like this instead of what you grow in your own garden,
yeah,
only leads to trouble. The old people have been telling us that. They're all dead from cancer now. All my grandparents are dead from cancer, and they always said, you know, that you live on the farm, you live natural, you have smarter kids, you eat better food, you have smarter kids. You have a better quality of life. You may have to walk to school, but you know what? It's better than living in the, you know, in the positive ion environment of a polluted city. And overpopulation only leads to a downfall. And the Rastas tell stories about it. The Aboriginals of all over this North America, the stories that I'm hearing are all saying the same thing. And it's the downfall is from people forgetting what empowers them, which is it. You need to be dependent on your own family and your own garden and not what someone's bringing to you on a silver platter. It's convenient, but only for a certain point. And that point, I think, has come. People are looking to alternatives. In the third world, we're getting really good response on this.
Another quick question. Are you associated with the Time for Hemp in America?
No, I heard a guy told... He actually was, I think, a little bit upset because he thought that we were trying to use our company that we started with. Started as a food company, and we spell it like the herb thyme.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that there was I guess he does music festivals every year.
Mhm.
And I forget what his name was, Casper or something.
Right.
But we're not we're not affiliated with them. We have our own, we don't have any real activity going on in the States except for members that are from down there.
Right. Yeah, because I tried typing, the way you spell it, timeforhemp.com. I didn't know, I forgot about the viviti.com.
Yeah.
And it brought me to time, the clock time. And number4hemp.com.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he uses the number 4, I think, too.
Yeah.
It's a pretty common... When I used to type in... Because we did searches to see if there were any companies using the word thyme, like as in the spice.
Right.
And nothing came up at all, but when you type that out now, you get all kinds of different... We've got probably about 6 or 7 different sites that are sort of... Some people get turned off when they get right into the hemp. If you have hemp leaves everywhere, some people promote the culture through, more of the smoking and the bonging of it. And Mark Emery was pretty well known for always having a bong in his hand, and he reached an audience that way. What we're trying to do is reach people. Originally, we were doing it through a nutritional avenue.
Right.
So people who have cancer and people who need to, you know, end up trying to put on weight and increase their appetite should be eating hemp food anyway, even if they're not smoking it. They should be having hemp tea. They should be eating the omega-6 and 3. It's good for health, right? So that's
right.
Where we were approaching it. And then turns out there's a lot of other, musicians and other people like the Canadian Rick Simpson, who sort of oversees. I try to help out people who are kind of like having a hard time, let's just say, from the state for trying to promote this kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it's kind of funny because it's like almost 90% of Americans here, because I'm in the States, almost everyone I know smokes pot. Yet, it's the minority that keeps it illegal. It's the minority that locks people up and wastes tax dollars. Which brings me to my next question. How have you been affected by Mark Emery's arrest?
I'll tell you, it frightens the hell out of me, because the reason that it scares me is because, I'll tell you, the first time I ever protested anything towards cannabis related, the first time I ever really organized any protest was because Mark Emery was actually in prison in Saskatchewan for supposedly passing a joint to somebody when he came off stage. And because of his priors, whatever, he ended up being sentenced to a certain number of months in custody. And I thought, this is, you know, no matter what his priors are for marijuana-related stuff, that just doesn't, it's not right to be incarcerated. They should be bringing a writ of habeas corpus.
Right.
Anyway, long story made short, I don't agree with the way he's done his campaign, but I've understood, now that I realize that this cancer-causing basically industry is keeping the cure for cancer and basically a wellness sort of cure-all to live a really happy, self-sustaining life, they're keeping that down. It's for nefarious reasons. So the whole thing stinks. Mark Emery, as a Canadian, being exported and extradited to another country for a crime which doesn't exist in the country where he supposedly committed it,
right.
It sets a frightening precedent. You know, yeah. In the States, it's different. You and I can conspire to send heroin to the moon, and not even though neither of us have a spaceship, you're still guilty of the crime of conspiracy. In Canada, it doesn't work like that.
How has that affected your activism, though?
Well, it hasn't affected my activism in the sense that what I do and what I've been trying to work towards with people like Rick Simpson and the late, great Jack Herrera, when he needed to get out of Oregon and back to California. And it got all, you know, very difficult. And of course, it was in court, so it involves the state to a certain extent. And, you know, promoting things with, you know, sort of outgrow them and being overt with bongs and that sort of thing, really, it's counterproductive when you're trying to take a legal approach to things.
Right.
And my activism has always been kind of on the legal side. Like we got a gentleman in Switzerland right now who he's in jail and he's on a hunger strike and he's just ended a thirst strike. But thank goodness the Grand Council is going to be reviewing his matter. And he made an appeal, you know, there's no point in being in prison on a hunger strike if you don't have your appeal heard yet. If you've got an appeal being heard, you got to exhaust the proper channels. I may not agree with the system, but you've got to, the laws are the laws, so you've got to try to use them towards being able to live your life the way you want to. In Canada, in Ontario, where I am right now, you can get your license and you can use marijuana and grow it yourself. All you have to do is have a doctor who believes that it can help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this is happening, I think, in a lot of states too now.
Well, yeah, just mostly you hear that about that in California. I'm in New York. They decriminalized only about an ounce, and even still, after your fourth offense, they're locking you up for a long time.
Yeah, it's still like that. It's unbelievable. Yet so many people are using it, and
yeah,
just for help one sleep. They're getting kids. We have a doctor here who's prescribing it to her patients for ADHD.
Mm. Yeah, how's that working out?
Well, it improves focus. And they don't find that it's dangerous at really any level compared to Ritalin and the other traditional medicines
right. That
they're giving, you know, even to kids. So they're giving them a little bit of marijuana butter on their toast in the morning. So we're working with a guy who's a licensed grower, the largest in Canada that I'm aware of, and they're doing different types of foods now, and the essential oil is being actually brought into things that you can, it's an edible additive, so you can make your tea, and it's very standardized. They've got different
is this the Rick Simpson oil?
Well, yeah, Rick Simpson's oil is something that he developed himself, but they've got another way that they're doing it with only using ethanol and basically it's all hemp. You don't use any petroleum products in it.
Right.
And yeah, it's the essential oil.
Yeah, because I was watching his commercial, I mean his documentary.
Right.
on how to make it, and he's like, well, you gotta be careful because this could blow up and kill you. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, I think he's using an ether, or he's using a petroleum product, which will work because it sounds strange, but everything sort of evaporates away out of it anyway. But you can do that with a solvent. You can use that, you can do that with an ethanol or a methanol, apparently, that you get out of the hemp byproduct anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the real way to do it. You basically make moonshine, and then you use that to extract the essential oil. The moonshine evaporates away, and you're left with the essential oil.
I see. I mean, does that really work, though? Because, I mean, I have yet to hear of it really working by any real professional learned doctor.
Oh, 100%. They've had doctors. We interviewed Rick, and he was talking about it in January when he was in the Czech Republic. We talked to him for about an hour, and he tells the story about the doctor from Nova Scotia, where he's from. His patient had started using the hemp oil and had cancer completely disappear, and the doctor never bothered to call Rick Simpson back or follow up on it. They just wrote it off as an anomaly that they didn't want to follow up on. No doctor really that follows the my guess is Patch Adams would agree with it.
Right.
You gotta find a doctor who's pretty far outside the box to actually admit to this. There's a doctor who has cannabis science. He certainly has seen the research with his patients.
Right.
Once it happens again and again and it's documented hundreds and thousands of times, there's no more talking about research.
Right. We actually have a caller from Indiana on. Indiana, are you there?
I am here. It's an interesting conversation. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Who's this?
This is Casper Leach, Time for Hemp. Jason, you sent out information to your group that you were going to be in the program this evening, so I made it a point to listen in. Interesting conversation.
Hey, Casper, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I appreciate your communication over the weekend. Did you receive mine?
No, I don't think I have yet.
Okay. Well, please review that. You should be a class act, and I think you're going to be a wonderful friend in the future. And I'll take you up on your offer to change your name. Time for Hemp has been a radio show and a podcast for about 3 years and a television show for about 20. And I've been involved in the marijuana movement, and it's interesting to see new people come in. You seem pretty eager to make the world a better place, so I welcome you to the marijuana movement. It's very nice to see a hardworking activist like you.
Oh, look at that.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you also.
Thank you. And we have a large audience up in Canada, and I've had the opportunity to have Rick Simpson on the phone as an interview a couple of times, and you can find his interview in my archives if you go to timeforhemp.com. But one of the things that Rick Simpson said in that interview was that he had complications getting normal to participate in assisting him to get his information out. And during the course of that conversation, I asked Rick, would it be all right if I got Keith Strop on the phone and see what Keith had to say about that? And Rick said, well, if you think you can get Keith Strop on the phone at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, sure, try it. Well, Keith and I are pretty good friends, and I did. And Keith and Rick Simpson, in an interview with me, chatted, and Keith agreed that if Rick were to forward to him his information about all of his findings, that Normal would do all they could to assist Mr. Simpson in getting the information in front of Dr. Lester Grinspoon and all the right people here in Canada, in America. And 6 weeks after that conversation, I followed up on that, and Rick had not sent his information and also refused to do so. And in communicating with him in regards to Treating Yourself magazine, it's my understanding that Treating Yourself magazine made a real effort to help Mr. Simpson bring forward his information, because anybody who's got that kind of knowledge and that kind of information about curing cancer is certainly going to do what they can to bring that information to the forefront. And when it came down to the wire for that information to be handed over to Treating Yourself, so Treating Yourself could get it in front of the experts and start dealing with it, Mr. Simpson refused to move forward on that as well. So it seems frustrating that Mr. Simpson doesn't want to bring to the forefront through these chapters and through these people who are reaching out to help him, his information. That I find to be a little frustrating, if not baffling, wouldn't you?
Well, did you hear the interview that we had? We spoke to him the last time that we had a public, you know, conversation with him was in January, and that was shortly, you know, his house was raided in November. He had a tough time getting his story out for a number of reasons, and I don't know whether Normal was one of the ones at that time that was not reporting the story, or whether they were reporting it in that. He was careful about, I guess, who he was talking to, because he was technically, at that time, you know, a fugitive. The RCMP had charges against him here. The state came down pretty hard on Rick, basically the same time he received that award in Holland.
Yes, I understand. And these interviews took place last summer, and his involvement with Treating Yourself magazine took place last year, long before he went overseas.
Yeah, see, that's what I was wondering. So
We're reaching out to try to help him bring his information forward. And if any time anybody really put forth the effort to help him get his information out, he went, oh, no, no, no. It's like, oh, no, I don't want you to see that it doesn't work. And that's what the frustrating thing about it is. I mean,
sure.
Jack Hare,
no.
I worked for Jack Hare for 3 years, and Jack Hare in his latter years of his life really believed in Rick Simpson and hoped that Rick Simpson's claims were absolutely true. But even Jack, before he passed away, could find that he was frustrated that any time proof was sought, it was difficult to get beyond that point.
I understand. I think part of the frustration, I know that Rick had quite a few, I would say it's in the hundreds. There are a lot of court records of Rick trying to bring this to bear. And as far as he's concerned, he grew very frustrated with it falling on deaf ears. Apparently, there was a deal also with it. It got political into what levels of which movements were connected with whom and who had publishing. Rick is, from what I understand, since he's been in Europe in exile, he's been doing workshops with the Czech, in the Czech Republic, in Austria, in almost every European country where he's been. And at these seminars, you've got basically scientists there comparing their research. I think he's going about it now in a way that the stuff is not disputed. People can poke holes in anecdotal research. It's his worst nightmare, that word. Anecdotal is simply a word for something that isn't recorded according to following the scientific principle. Once it's been followed and clinical trials can take place on an outpatient basis, they just have to be recorded properly. So there have been... I think if you go on the website, there's contact information for quite a few people. Also, the people that were in the video, whether or not they want to come forward into which form, you know, to tell their story, I'm not sure.
I can tell you that now that he is in Europe, and from what you say, he's got all the opportunity now to dazzle the world with his amazing findings. Right before he gets to the finish line, that this time he doesn't withdraw and he actually does it. Like I said, it's just like every time somebody says, all right, show us your hand, it's like, oh, no, no, no. I might only have a couple of deuces and not really a full house.
Apparently he's written the book. The manuscript is done. The deal that was going to come through, he talks about it in our interview. It didn't work out, so he was trying to find another way to publish it. They were going to try to do it online. I was involved in that to a certain level, and then I got held up into something else. Things have been a little bit upside down for the last couple of months in terms of what's going on with his publishing. I'm not in the loop anymore, but when that comes out, my guess is that that's going to put a lot of things to rest, and he's had some time to do it with a lot of experts who are actually paying money to listen to him. So they're taking him seriously over there, and I just wish him the best. And we miss him here. When he comes back, I don't know whether he's going to want to be as public about it.
These experts are paying him money to listen to him. See, that was different, too, than here, whereas he had to pay people to listen to him. And so that's a nice change. At least he's getting money out of it, so that'll help. And maybe that'll help with all the things that he needs to accomplish. I just find it to be interesting. I wanted to broach that because that seemed to be one of the topics that at your website that you really find to be enthusiastically interesting. And so I thought it might be a lively conversation since I had the opportunity to finally meet you.
That's fantastic. It's really good to talk to you. And I'm going to pass, by all means, I'm not Rick's spokesperson, but I'm going to pass along the frustration because he's got big shoes to fill as far as I'm concerned, because what Rick has done just personally for me has basically made me decide to dedicate the rest of my walking life to making sure that this story is told.
Because you seem like a very, very dedicated activist and someone who's eager to bring the truth to the forefront. And for that, I count the marijuana movement lucky to have your energy and your spirit.
Well, and your leadership. Thank you for all that you've done.
Oh, quite. No problem. Anyway, I just wanted to drop in and let you know that it is a weekly podcast, not a yearly concert. And the podcast, and then my live radio show, Time for Hemp Live, which would be why I might be frustrated if somebody were to use that for an email address, is Monday through Friday from 11 to midnight on American Freedom Radio, Central Standard Time. After you and I communicate, Jason, by email, and we take care of some of the things that we needed to take care of, it might be fun to have you as a guest on my show.
That would be great. I'll look forward to getting to that email. Thanks.
Beautiful, and may your week be full of comedy. And I'm sorry to drop in like that, Louie, but I was listening, and it was Jason who sent the email about that he was going to be on your show. And
okay.
I wanted to see what the gentleman was all about. And I, like I said, I think he's a class act and could be a valuable asset to the marijuana movement. And I look forward to his communique over the next couple of days. Take care, Jason.
Okay.
You too. Thanks.
Take care, Casper. All right. Well, that was interesting.
That's lovely. That's funny that you asked, because I was looking forward to getting in touch with him by email. I don't have very, very good email here on the iPod. It's hard for me to type.
Right.
So
right,
that's good.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. So, how were you influenced by Mr. Jack Herrera?
Well, I'm going to be very blunt with you.
Mm.
The people that Jack Herrera inspired, it, you know, are, include many people who I have looked up to, you know, as a kid,
mm-hmm.
people who had read his book, for example, even recently. And I'll be honest, I didn't even read Jack's book because it was a little bit wacky for me. It was too far. I couldn't believe it was just for this. I didn't know about Rick Simpson either, and the thought that there could be such an organized, sinister movement to keep something that was so good in such a bad place and make so many people suffer as a result of that, to me was unthinkable. Anyone who had that as a theory, I couldn't get into a conversation with him about it, because maybe I didn't want to believe it, to be honest with you. And so I thought of Jack as somebody who really knew what he was talking about, but the truth was too radical for my mind to understand from his voice, and I didn't get it until I realized that it absolutely does have an effect on cancer.
You needed that bud to grow into a bud.
Absolutely, and it was nurtured, and now when I listen to what Jack says, we've got a CD that a DJ out of New Mexico has put together, and there's some samples of Rick Simpson in there, and there's some samples of Jack, and a lot of people talking about Jack, and this is what he's put together. He's such a genius that it's going to take people a long time to really make total sense of it. Only people who knew him very well and followed him closely really understand it. They get it. But he's got a lot of complex stuff in there. He's got his bodies of work, unbelievable, and he's a saint as far as I'm concerned. So his influence for me came too late. I was never able to go and see him. I've never been able to meet him, but he lives in me and is in my thoughts almost every day.
Okay. What inspired you to take up this cause? What makes you want to work hard in the marijuana hemp movement?
My dad had cancer. He had an occult primary, and it was in his neck near his lymph node, and basically that was it. I went to go get his affairs together and see him through chemotherapy and radiation, and he decided to stop his chemotherapy and start taking cannabis instead. He started putting on weight. He regained everything. He even grew his hair back, and he's gone on to hemp completely. I found out about Rick Simpson just after my father had made that decision. It was funny, and because I was looking into what cannabis could be doing that would be helping him with cancer, and when I saw that it, forget about whether it helps you with cancer, it helps your body recover from chemotherapy, I realized that it really did have healing powers. And the more I looked into the healing powers, the more I came across Jack Herrera, Rick Simpson, cannabis science was just starting around then. This was all last fall. And I thought, my goodness.
So your dad is completely healed?
He's 100% healed, and they can't understand even where the cancer came from. So
I actually have somebody else in my chat room right now who could probably explain where the cancer probably came from. So I don't know if Chrissy wants to call in and explain that, but yeah. It's in the environment, like how you said in the beginning. It's everywhere. I mean, it's in our food. It's in the air.
That's right, but they normally can find what's called a primary tumor. Like you would find it in your prostate, or you would find it in stomach cancer or lung cancer. But when you have somebody who gets cancer that just shows up in their lymph node, that means that their body has already killed the cancer, and you're just finding the scale of the cancer, if you want, in the lymph node. It gets filtered out, and that's where they call it an occult primary, because they don't know where the original cancer came from. Well, people who have THC in their system and cannabinol, mm-hmm. they don't end up developing cancer. It's like adding Javex to water. Algae doesn't grow in water if it has Javex in it. And the way I understand it, through, it's called the Seth Institute. I don't know if you've checked out that, but they've got a really brief time lapse of, I think it's 2 days, where they inject an herbal cannabis compound extract into brain cancer cells, and they show the live cancer cells being killed next to the healthy cancer cells, which remain completely unaffected and still live. And it only took 2 days for all the cancer to basically, the cancer cells kill themselves. It's like they're not getting oxygen, and they're not getting something that they need just by adding that herbal extract into the system. Interesting. So a lot of research is going to be done, I think. But certainly what we know is it's not harmful.
Well, I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, the reason why this cannabis is not more mainstream is because, I mean, how cheap is it to make these medicines?
Sure, it's unreal. I know. We were going through the byproducts of we put a biorefinery project in somewhere. Do you realize that they're getting, you realize, but when people understand that they get paper, they get building material,
right.
They get cooking oil, they get fuel oil, their cooking oil is also burnable. It's the brightest burning lamp oil you've got is your cooking oil that you're using.
We can save the whales too?
You can even save the whales.
Yeah, I mean, just, they used to get oil from whales, so.
No, I know, it's unbelievable. And the burning, you can imagine the smell, the odor of burning oil from whales versus burning hemp oil.
Right. I mean, I like what the benefits it does for me, because I'm a diabetic.
Sure.
And I've seen the benefits it has for me. And I mean, I'm thinking, wait a minute, if I can make my own medicine out of this, I can pretty much save like at least $80 a month in medications. So, yeah, it's I mean, again, I mean, this, it's not so much, well, in my belief, it's really the government, because they're the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry has them by the balls, because they're like, don't legalize this because then we're going to lose money.
It's that simple. There's trillions and trillions of dollars at stake, and it's sad that that takes precedence over what's right. But in our world, we don't live in an ideal world with ideal people making ideal choices with the power we've given them. It's the corporations running the show, and it has been since DuPont and their friends had it outlawed in the first place. So the solution is to do it. It's going to be done elsewhere where the governments have no really other alternative. And when it's done elsewhere, I see it happening in the States, and they'll commercialize it, I think. It's going to be taxed likely in California, and I guess Oregon look like they're going to go ahead with that. What's your sense on that?
Well, as far as Oregon growing industrial hemp, I mean,
yeah.
I am jealous. because I mean, it's kind of like I guess a little daydream that I had to start my own hemp industry here in New York City. I mean, that would solve not only the job problems, money problems in this state. I mean, goodness, I mean, imagine how many jobs are going to be created in Oregon once that goes in full swing. I mean, all the hemp fabrication companies that could spring forward. Like you said, oil, soaps, I mean, medicine, it would be unreal. I mean, and imagine how much cheaper will it be for us Americans to get our hemp powder, because I love hemp powder. I like to blend it up.
Oh, I know.
I like to blend.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
Oh, I like to blend it up with my milk, cinnamon oil, and banana with some stevia. Oh, it's delicious.
Yeah, you bet.
Especially on a summer day, you know, when you don't want to, like, really want to cook something, you know, you don't want nothing too heavy because it's hot,
you get everything you need from the hemp. It's unbelievable. It's a complete protein replacement, which people don't even realize, but you don't actually need anything else.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
it's refreshing.
It is. And you slam that down. I mean, it's delicious. And I mean, I have to get mine from like the Manitoba Harvest Company, and it's expensive. I mean, I know you're in Canada. If we legalize it here, it'd probably hurt your economy a little bit. I mean, not a lot of people know about the benefits of hemp protein powder, though. But
no, you got it. And it's, you know what, you won't even believe, making the protein powder is a byproduct of pressing the oil from the seed.
Well, there
you
go.
It's so efficient to use this, and to press the oil from the seed, you just use a cold press machine. It's just something you can do with your hand. Yeah, you can get fancy and have a mechanized one and whatnot, but you can literally make the hemp oil and end up with the seed cake and the protein powder and the meal flour as a byproduct. And the village, you have one of these per village. People can survive. You can live on it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't like how they have to radiate it before we get it, though. That's another problem I have. I mean, because we gotta radiate the seeds so that way that you can't grow hemp, even though
there's one way around that. You can have the dehulled. If they dehull the seed, then you just have the hemp nut, and you can have the hemp nut without it being radiated. But it has to be cracked out of that hull. They're so afraid that you'll plant it, you know.
Yeah, they really are, because I mean, if you plant it and I mean you start growing it and you're able to use that to pay off debt like they used to do back when this country was young. it was against the law not to grow hemp. It's ridiculous.
Of course, they had the right ideas. That's what the American forefathers are really, of all historians on this continent, they're among my favorite, because they really knew what they were talking about. George Washington knew that, you know, he must have had the most horrible toothaches, and he knew what solved the toothaches.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Thomas Jefferson, these guys, I can understand why America, and I spent time going to school in the States, but I understand where the country was founded on great principles and you know, even drafted on hemp paper what they were going to do to England. And, you know, it's so sad how far it's come around to the opposite of that, and the very fundamental freedoms that were you know, the sort of the point of the whole thing, have been trampled upon and forgotten, and everyone's too busy chasing something other than to see what the truth is right before their very eyes.
I would love to grow industrial hemp in my backyard. I mean, it grows all year round. I mean, what? That's a, you know, just call me Farmer Green, I guess. I mean, it's, if I got this correctly, for everyone that believes the whole global warming hoax sort of thing, that carbon dioxide causes global warming, these plants suck up more CO2 and produce more oxygen.
Yeah, the project that's going to happen in Guyana, they're earning carbon credits because they're going to play that game, because that's the game that's been set up.
Yeah.
But by growing industrial hemp, you actually earn carbon credits. You earn more carbon credits from a hemp crop than you do from, believe it or not, virgin rainforest. I didn't believe that, and I may stand corrected on that, but the research that I just saw actually... believe it or not, is that high.
It makes no sense not to grow it. It's insane not to grow it. What you're telling me is correct, the whole plant is used. Nothing gets wet. Yeah.
And it has a taproot that goes down several feet, 3 feet up to maybe 6 feet deep. By having a taproot that goes that deep, you're actually replenishing the soil. So growing it, not only should it not be grown wherever there's nothing being grown anyway, but growing it is actually getting the soil ready to grow something else. If you want to grow a more demanding crop on the soil, after hemp or any kind of cannabis, you can go ahead and grow in there, and the leaves naturally fall off and replenish the soil. It's quite an amazing plant. So it's also a powerful plant. I guess that's why they've been controlling it. But the tide's turning, and the oil dependence momentum, the dependence on oil, momentum is moving away from there. Momentum towards healthy living and, 100 mile. We're having big, I don't know what you do in New York with that, but have you heard of the 100 mile diet or the 100 mile restaurants or cafes? Do you guys have those?
Never heard of that.
They try to have everything come within 100 miles of where it's being consumed, right? To try to, reduce footprints and get the idea of eating fresh. But in urban cities, in urban areas, it's kind of hard to do. But you've got a lot of indoor gardens.
Yeah, not really.
Places. No?
Not really, because, I mean, I know I like to buy some vegetables from the farmer's market. We have a lot of farmer's markets here.
Nice.
So, I mean, upstate New York is where a lot of the farmland is. So, I mean, they come from there to downstate in New York City.
Yeah, that's the idea. The farmers markets are coming from local anyway. So, that's good.
Yeah. I'm Googling 100 mile, the 100 mile diet. Let me see. I'm trying to find something in New York. Well, yeah, I mean, it's mostly upstate. It's not really too much in the city.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I haven't been to New York in a lot of years.
So, yeah. I mean, you're just over the border.
Yeah, well, we're not far. We're actually, we're the big greenhouses. I think we're going to do something and maybe give away some way for some people to come up for a tour. We're going to do some filming.
Mm-hmm.
At these big greenhouse projects where they grow the medicinal hemp.
Yeah, I actually have a thought. If anybody's like up there is really industrious and they start a hemp type spa, make hemp facials and hemp wraps or something like that, and probably charge a pretty penny to get that done, and how women love to just use the whatever to rejuvenate themselves. I mean, I saw this one chick using ammonia. Hello?
Oh, there, I lost you for a minute there.
Ah. So, yeah, oh man, where were we? So, I mean, the importance of this plan is just, My next question is, I mean, if when it does get legalized, because I can't see it with the growing support with politicians admitting that they smoked marijuana and stuff like that, what's to stop Monsanto from creating a genetically modified hemp plant that will probably cause cancer?
Oh yeah, I hate to say it. I don't think there's money in causing cancer anymore. They already know money's in curing stuff, and I think that Monsanto and everyone else is already well ahead of this. There's already genetics in Canada. We have certain cultivars that are already approved, and you look at the names of these cultivars. You know, one of them is called Carmen, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them are called, you know, scientific sounding names that are just basically a code. So you know that the corporations have already been modifying and genetically altering the cannabis strains for many years. You know, even enthusiast growers themselves like to modify strains if they can to try to get it a little bit more the way they want it, right?
Right. Yeah, but I'm, you know, I'm talking about how Monsanto, they'll make a corn with live AIDS virus in it. I mean, what's to stop them? It's ridiculous.
Let them try to put it in cannabis because it'll cure whatever they put into it anyway. It'll be counterproductive. I'm kidding, but
yeah.
I don't trust them as much as I could throw them, I swear to goodness. One of my relatives was from Saskatchewan, and Monsanto tried to sue. I forget how it got started, but Monsanto claimed that he owed them money because their special genetically altered grain had basically polluted his farm, and it was absurd. He ended up having to go to the Supreme Court of Canada to finally get Monsanto off of his case, but he won against them, and from then on, that name just scares me. It makes my skin crawl.
Yeah, I mean, they're dirty. They're really dirty. I mean, they can't contain their pollen in their own field, and it flies into someone, and they try to take over their land. I mean, that's how they did it in India, and caused a lot of Indian farmers to kill themselves.
Yeah, I've even heard about that too. It's just unreal. But you know, I think that having it done locally, I think you've got the municipalities and the different councils that you've got in each little area can kind of decide, like during Prohibition days, when you ended up having alcohol coming in, hey, some counties may want to be dry counties. They may not want it grown. They may not, you know, and maybe it'll come down like that so that if people are that really dead set against it, they can vote to have it excluded from their small area.
Right.
But as far as the genuine... I don't think people are that adamantly opposed to it anyway, even if they say they are. If it came right down to it, I think they'd rather live next to cannabis than a bar.
I know I do. I mean, especially my neighborhood of Brooklyn, we got like one block, it would be like five bars for one side of the block, and then across the street you got another five bars, and oh yeah, a church.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, and imagine the people coming out, stumbling and causing trouble, and you know, like every weekend, I'm always having to catch somebody drunk attempting to urinate or defecate near the stairs.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So
lovely,
I mean, I'm like, oh, this is great, and I mean, I've never had to deal with that with anyone on pot.
No, you wouldn't. They would be very nervous about going even for a leak outside. They'd make sure there was no one looking. They did a study in Switzerland about whether or not seeing what sorts of drugs people had in their system when they showed up at the emergency room, and they were amazed. To me, it makes sense. To you, it would probably make sense too. But these researchers were amazed that it appeared the more cannabis these patients had consumed, the less likely they were to be in the emergency room. So it had an inverse effect on safety.
Right.
Because people that were using cannabis were not, you know, found in car accidents. They weren't found outside doing things or getting hit by cars, or they were likely at home on a couch, and so they weren't getting hurt.
Yeah, either that or they drive really slow.
That's right. You're not going to see them in accidents. Don't happen to people that are using cannabis.
No.
The worst
thing
that happens is they'll leave the don't cook on cannabis because the craft dinner will boil over. But
yeah, it's like, oh, F it. It'll cook itself.
I know.
Yeah,
I mean
a comedian. Yeah, I mean, sorry, comedian Cat Williams. he mentioned the main ingredient in marijuana is fuck it all. You stop giving a fuck. That's basically the ingredient in marijuana.
Yeah, that's funny.
So, man. So, what about this cafe?
No, I was going to say in Holland, I was having a good chat with a guy who owned a cafe, and I'd ordered a toasty, and him and I were both, he was showing me the different kinds of cannabis that he had, and we were both enjoying it, and he had forgotten, and I had forgotten that he had put a toasty on, so by accident he had burnt it, and we both just laughed about it, and it was no big deal at all. And I laughed at how often can someone burn something in a restaurant, and you find it funny, and it's no big deal, and you just look forward to getting another one. Never. Usually you'd be upset about that, you know, but in that kind of, you know, Holland is funny that where the World Court is centered, it's in sort of the center of the United Nations, and in Holland, cannabis has been legal for quite some time, decriminalized, and people have been using it and keeping happy, and the Dutch have been capitalizing on it because look at the tourism they've had in Holland because of that.
Yeah.
Talk about billions of dollars, and why is it okay in Holland? For people to smoke marijuana, and they have a lot of other things legal in Holland. They're a hell of a lot worse, but to adopt the legalization of cannabis, it's not quite as radical as you think if you look at Holland, and that's where the World Court sits. It seems kind of absurd, really, that these other countries have to have it illegal.
Hell, there's certain countries in Asia where they put it on the pizza. It's ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, well, Nepal refused to join the United Nations treaty, and they said that they were going to allow opium and also cannabis and hashish to be used in their country without signing onto the treaty. So Nepal's the only one that actually had the ball to say we weren't going to sign onto this, and they haven't. Every other country is basically being hypocritical as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. just going through some news here. Archaeologists found a 2,700-year-old weed stash hidden in an ancient tomb in China used by Chinese shaman 2,700 years ago.
There you go.
Would you smoke that?
I don't know. Hell yeah.
That was quick. I don't
on
know.
A dry Sunday?
I don't know. Oh yeah.
<That's too much.
laughs> I mean, let's see the people in the chat room. Would you smoke 2,700-year-old weed? Yeah, somebody said put that on your pizza. Yeah. That shit
yeah.
ain't normal. But yeah. Talk about, I mean, does weed freaking mature as good as fine wine?
I tell you, I've smoked some really, 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 really old weed that was so bone dry. I'm not going to say that it wasn't harsh, but there was nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, well, there you go.
A couple of millennia may be pushing it, though.
Hey, you know. Hey, let me hear this from the Star. I'm going to post this on the blog after the show. It's this is from November 7, 2008, thestar.com. Ottawa, researchers say they have located the world's oldest stash of marijuana in a tomb in a remote part of China. The cache of cannabis is about 2,700 years old and was clearly cultivated for psychoactive purpose rather than as a fiber for clothing or as food, says research paper in the Journal of Experimental Botany. The 789 grams of dried cannabis was buried alongside a light-haired, blue-eyed Caucasian man, likely a shaman of the Gushi culture near Turpan in northwestern China. The extremely dry conditions and alkaline soil acted as preservatives, allowing a team of scientists to carefully analyze the stash. Yeah, by analyze, they fucking smoked that shit. which still looked green enough, green though it had lost its distinctive odor. How did they know that? To our knowledge, these investigations provide the oldest documentation of cannabis as a pharmacological active agent, says the newly published paper, whose lead author was American neurologist Dr. Ethan B. Russo. Remnants of cannabis have been found in ancient Egypt and other sites, and the substance had been referred to by authors such as the Greek historians Herodotus, but the tomb stash is the oldest so far that could be roughly tested for its properties.
Wow. I remember that.
Yeah. Delicious.
Unreal.
Now, what this article doesn't say is that they found a 2,700-year-old box of Captain Crunch. So, that old gag.
That one they can't figure out.
No, they can't. It's like, what? They were great. So what are other important issues that you would like to tell the audience, because we got like 4 minutes left to the show?
Well, I guess I would just like to briefly mention that if people are interested in the international aspect of the legalization of cannabis, there's a great group that I try to put some information up onto once in a while on Facebook, Legalized Cannabis International. That group is got different things targeted towards youth, towards education, and towards looking at the United Nations Convention and how we can work to help people around the world. Our Swiss officer is Bernard, who's in prison right now, and people can learn about his case and working together, we're arm in arm. We're gonna overcome this little struggle. I have no doubt in it, in my mind whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it can't fail. I don't see this failing. There's too many people that want this, and too many people that will occupy Canadian MPs' offices.
That's right. It's not going to come to that, but I think the genie's out of the bottle, and where it has to come to that, it certainly will. It's going to be seen as an inherent right, and I think it always was. It was meant to be, and that's what we're going to take back. So, like I said, it's going to happen in Canada. It's going to happen in the States. It's going to happen in Europe. It's going to happen in the third world, maybe even sooner than we think. I think that come January, you're going to hear a lot of news out of Guyana, because what we do is going to be replicated elsewhere there.
Right. I mean, we're usually behind here in the West, so... So anyways, I would like to thank you for coming on. I mean, it was a blast having you on. Definitely, if you want to come on again, you're always free. You're always welcome to call in. If you want to be like, hey, Louis, I want to come on, I'm like, no problem. So we have an open door policy.
That's nice to know, Louis. It's been great talking to you. Really look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, sir. So yeah, this has been the Crotch Shot Radio Show. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Please help us out. Go to Crotch Shot Radio Show. crotchshotradio.com/store. We got some stuff for sale there. Help us out. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends to listen. We're on Zoom, iTunes, ZenCast. For free download, visit the crotchshotradio.com every day, and we always update with articles. Like now, I'm about to update the story about the 2,700 year old marijuana, because it's fantastic. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening. This has been the Crotch Shot Radio Show saying, you know what, fuck the New World Order. And if you don't want to look into what we're saying, you don't want to expand your mind, your horizons, then apparently there's nothing I could help you with. And I'm sorry. Fuck you too.